Welcome to the iCoder podcast with Ian McDuff.
Welcome to this next iteration of the podcast for the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. I'm Ian McDuff and coming to you from Wellington, New Zealand. Today, I am delighted. I'm always delighted with my guests, and particularly to see Petros again. And this is the first of the podcasts, which now takes us outside mainland USA. So thank you for doing that, Petros. Allow me a brief introduction. The introduction is, or could be, extensive because Petros is extraordinarily busy and has his hand in a number of events. Petros Roumis has a background in law, economics, dispute resolution. He's actively involved in mediating and negotiating complex disputes, multinational, local companies. He deals with high-value commercial disputes. And this is an important, we may come back to this one also, Petros. You introduced bank mediation in Greece, and I'd be interested to find out if any of that is online. You are the general director of ADR Point, the Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution, which is, I didn't know until fairly recently, the largest mediation center in Greece and Southeast Europe. And it's also an ADR entity linked to, notified to the EU. I think you are at the moment the only entity linked to the EU in this respect, I believe.
Actually, there are two other, which are the state public entities. Yes. Public,
But you're the only private entity. And you're involved with IMI qualification assessment, member of the Central Mediation Committee of the Greek Ministry of Justice, president of the Association of Greek Mediators, fellow of the National Center of Technology for Technology and Dispute Resolution. We share that. Founding member of ADR TravelNet, I'd like to come back to that too if we have time. A member of the Registry of Financial Experts for the General Secretariat for the Ministry of Finance. You're involved in debt settlement, private debt settlement. Founder of ODR Europe, which is something again we wish to talk about. And a regular speaker at conferences and seminars. Before we kick off, there will be, for those who are listening to this podcast, there will be two or possibly three websites mentioned. I will endeavor to spell out the names of those websites, but I'll also ensure that those websites are linked to this podcast when it's uploaded. So don't panic, those websites will be there. So let us kick off. I'm delighted to have this chance to talk with you. I'm in the happy position I can see you, but we are going to be doing this audio only for the podcast. Petros, can I start with a general question, first of all, just to get an impression of the state of ODR in Greece? What's your assessment of the reception, how advanced it is, how widely received?
Well, Ian, first of all, let me start by thanking you for having me in this podcast. It's a great honor for me doing this podcast coming from you. You're the pioneer of ODR, and you know, we have so much to learn from you, and it's a real honor. I'm really honored by this invitation.
Thank you.
Now, coming to the state of the ODR in Greece, it's not very well. And I tell you that from my experience all these years, the pace is very slow. Talking about things have changed a little bit with COVID, meaning that there are so many mediators practicing in Greece and that they had to do some mediations online using, you know, the common tools like Zoom platforms or Google Meet or, but I don't quite know whether, you know, this is a big issue, a big debate, whether this is actually online ODR or just simply an online mediation using video conference tools. I don't think ODR is in Greece implemented yet to the extent that we would like to see it. There's absolutely no discussion in the committee that I mean, the mediation committee in the Ministry of Justice, that we are mostly concerned with issues that have to do with every everyday practice of mediation and some procedural issues and some amendments what we need to do to the law and how the whole thing works. Now we have introduced in Greece mandatory mediation, meaning that you cannot go to hearing in the court in quite big spectrum of cases if you don't go to mediation first, at least one mandatory meeting the parties with their lawyers. It seems to work well because before that we only had a handful of mediations, and now we have some thousands of mediations. And a big amount of that actually, you know, come to a solution. So for us, is a big step. To come to your to your first question, ODR is not very well implemented in Greece. I don't think there is, you know, the mentality or the decision making that we need to take it one step forward. For example, I will tell you also that's the same happening in the courts. The only thing that we have seen being digitalized is the possibility of filing in the court the lawsuit, sure, or you know, have an electronic signature, which is for me is a development, an evolvement that belongs to the last century and not to the 21st century. It's so we have a lot of things to do.
So do you detect a resistance? Is there a resistance from the profession to the idea of ODR, from perhaps older practitioners who don't want to adapt? Is there a response from the courts which is reluctant?
They're both reluctant. It's pretty amazing, and I'm glad that you're bringing up this question. Is, you know, lawyers in Greece are not very keen to change this. Same goes for judges. They like the way they are. They like the model that they have. They don't feel it's not within their comfort zone to make changes, technological changes. So if you tell them that, you know, Mr. Judge, now from now on, you will sit instead of a bench, you will sit in your sofa in your house, and you can perform your duty. I don't think they get very well. Same goes with lawyers. You know, they want to go to the courts, traditional lawyers. And that brings to my mind the book by Professor Susskind, the lawyer of the future. I cannot imagine that the lawyer of the future will be something like that. But yes, there is a resistance. And I have to say that a year ago or a year and a half, we participated in a call in a European grant together with the Ministry of Justice and three universities. Unfortunately, we didn't get it, but it had to do with this transformation. For some reason, the European Commission thought that it was not the time mature to do that, but we're going to refile to file for this call again, and hopefully we will get it. It was a very big project that had to do with shifting to online course, and also a very good pilot program whereby we will assist judges. We will appoint one mediator to 20 judges, one to each judge, 20 judges all over the courts in Greece, to screen the cases, discuss with the judge, and the mediator will consult him and say, look, this is better to send it to the mediation instead of, you know, taking to the hearing. So this was a great project, but it didn't work at that time. We will try it again.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, as you speak of both the reluctance of the courts and of the profession, whether what's needed, and this may be an issue in every call, that every podcast that I have in every jurisdiction, whether what is needed is a champion. You know, the ODR as well as ADR, but ODR particularly needs a champion. I mean, as you may know, I worked for a number of years in Singapore, which is not a physically large country, and therefore issues of distance are not great. Mm-hmm. But what they had and have is a champion in the Chief Justice, who basically was really pushing the move towards digitalizing the courts. And so it needs a champion in the UK. You've got Richard Susskind. In the US, there's any number of people who are promoting it. So it's you may well turn out to be that champion, Petros.
So many people that I know, like you, Colin, and Leah, and so, Ethan, and so many other people, you know, it reminds me what Colin said in one speech that, you know, at the beginning, you know, they make mock of it, and then, yeah, you know, they, and at the end, they always supported the idea and how good ODR for courts is. We need to persuade, and this is something that we're working, we are lobbying with the Ministry of Justice, and we try to talk them into this mentality, and I think that sooner or later we will manage that, because we have a very good connection with the ministry. Hopefully we will, you know, start a pilot project with online mediation and see how it goes, but we might organize something in Greece. I was always thinking like a conference or something, a very specific, sure, with stakeholders, you know, not open to the public, to make this first We'll see. Yeah,
because in a way, the changes that you're talking about, in fact, that we've talked about in the last couple of podcasts as well, the changes don't need to be large and scary. I mean, you know, Colin's conversation about the metaverse last week might be a bit scary for a lot of people, but the changes that I imagine you're thinking about are not hugely transformative. They're incremental, and lawyers ought to be accustomed to incremental change. But now, this maybe takes us away from our plans. But I just find it interesting to begin to track, as I hope to over the coming weeks, what's happening in different jurisdictions and how the idea of shifting to a more digital access to justice is being received. And the story you tell is actually quite a familiar one. But it's I think there's also reason to be optimistic. Can I turn to a couple of things that you specifically are involved with? And this is where we refer to the first of the web links. You've mentioned something in our correspondence called ADR for All. And the spelling, for those who are listening to this later, ADR numeral 4, ALL.com. So it's ADR for All. What's the plan? What's the thinking? What's the platform here?
Okay, this is a website dedicated to a smartphone application that we've built, along with a system that supports this application, the backend system, the administration system, and we call it All ODR Ecosystem. And this started a few years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago, with an idea of addressing access to consumers, access for consumers to dispute resolution. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, this started with a European project that we participated in. And actually this is the third now we're running on the same app. And the idea was to build a smartphone application whereby any consumer, wherever he lives or wherever he travels, would be able to have access when he had a dispute with the trader. Mm-hmm. Also, wherever the trader was established. That means that not only within the European Union, but also in other places of the world. So the idea was, if we are able to solve that easily, we should also be able to resolve disputes in an easy way. So we start building this app. At the beginning, the first version was had just a few features and options. So if someone would buy a thing, whether buy it online or offline, he would use his phone to submit a complaint to an ADR body. And this ADR body will communicate to the trader and see if he can mediate the case and resolve the dispute. That would be a comfort for both of the parties. Now, the European Commission insisted on promoting further this idea of consumer dispute resolution, and which brought us to the second version of the app, which is much more, you know, expanded and sophisticated. So now we have numerous features and several options, which makes it a great tool. And as far as I know, a unique tool. There is no other smartphone application to address this sort of disputes. So what we did is we provided for two workflows. The first one was ADR for travel, including all the travel disputes, and the other part is ADR for other. So the user would initially be asked to choose the flow. Do you have a travel dispute or any other dispute? So you can choose the flow. And after two or three screens, you ask the user is also asked to choose another flow, whether he will choose to negotiate directly with the trader or refer his case to an advisor. So the first option is always recommended by us. So we say to the consumer, first try to resolve directly with the trader. And then if this doesn't succeed, doesn't reach a settlement, then you can refer your case to another body. I must say that the system is very good, is great actually. I don't know whether you had the chance or the time to see it. It's on in Android. Yeah. It's in Android now for the moment, but in a couple of weeks, no more, it will be also launched for iOS. Mm-hmm. So when the consumer, let's assume that he tries to negotiate, then he fills in there's a wizard, a very easy one. Mm-hmm. He's asked to fill in the details of the trader and his country and the particulars of the case. And then he submits the case. The case goes directly to the trader if the email is correct, and also to the central administration panel of the app. And if the trader is part of the system, then he will address it immediately. If not, ADR Point, which is the provider, will contact the trader, ask him if he wishes to become part of this ODR ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And if he does, then the whole process will run smoothly and hopefully the problem will be resolved between the two parties. The consumer also has the option if he is engaged. I forgot to say that the whole thing, the whole discussion between the trader and the consumer is in the app. So the only thing that the consumer needs to do is has his smartphone on his hand, and then he can chat and upload documents and get information from the trader and so on, everything through his smartphone app. Wow. On the other hand, the trader has a platform where he can manage his case. Now, the consumer also has the option, if this doesn't lead to a settlement, he also has the option to refer the case to another body. In such case, he will resubmit that he will find in his app all the details pre-completed, and he simply has to click refer the case to another body. In such case, the case will reach the administration panel. The administrator will do a legal and the procedural check, meaning that it should fall within the scope of the directive if it's a European case or any other rules that we have. And the second is to be able to recognize that it's okay with regard to the rules of procedure of the ADR body. And then he will appoint a mediator to assist him in the case. And again, if the mediator manages to strike a deal between the two parties, it's okay. Otherwise, that's the end of the story. And then each party can pursue further the dispute in any other possible way.
Okay, let me just check a couple of things here because this sounds intriguing. You mentioned the European directive. So all of this process you have is within the requirements of the EU directive on ODR. One of requirements of which, as I recall, was enforceability, as well as the training of mediators. So maybe come back to questions of enforceability, but when you mentioned the trader, do traders need to be registered as part of this ecosystem? In a way, this is maybe something that people like Colin and Amy refer to as a kind of trust mechanism. If a trader is part of your ecosystem, that adds to their trust, this little stamp on their website. Is that the case?
Absolutely, yes. And this is like an ADR for all trust mark that we say to the traders, that you can have the ADR for all trust mark. And of course, you will promote also the ADR for all application to your customers, consumers, in case something comes up. But yes, it needs to be a registered party. in order to get the credentials and logging into the platform and manage all the cases that are coming through him. The reason, Ian, that we thought of this dual process, and you know, we took it one step ahead, is that we noticed in all cases that we are resolving in our ADR center that traders are not very much willing to engage into ADR practices. This happens in civil and commercial disputes, but it also happens in consumer disputes. So they prefer to handle the case internally. So speak directly to the consumer and try to find a solution. So what we thought, and this is something that you can see by the numbers, and this is also something that the European Commission report has pinpointed as a major issue, because since the process is voluntary, you need the trader, otherwise you cannot tango with just the consumer. So what we thought is, okay, you don't like very much ADR. I can understand that. So what about negotiation? So we give him the tool of negotiation. But then at a certain point, we tell them, look, we also believe in direct negotiation. Just in case you cannot manage, because obviously you resolve a lot of issues with negotiation, but just in case you cannot manage, next door, there's ADR, okay? I mean, mediation. So why not trying that? You'll see how good it is. So we try in a nice way, something that would not discomfort them, or, you know, we don't want to create to them the sense that, you know, they're dragged into the process.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think this will work smoothly. We'll see about that. But that's the whole idea of providing for two different processes.
That point, ma'am, there's a number of points that are interesting, but that particularly about your comment on the trader's reluctance to participate in ADR is consistent with the findings of my friend and colleague Anna Howard. I don't know if you know of her work for her doctorate at Queen Mary College. She looked at cross-border commercial disputes and found, as you have found, that lawyers and commercial people were reluctant to enter mediation, but regarded themselves as good at negotiation, so were willing to do negotiation. So somehow the incentive and pathways need to be created, as you seem to have done, to take people into mediation. So what's the experience been so far of settlement? Has there been much cross-border work with traders or consumers outside Greece, outside the EU? What's the snapshot at the moment?
Yeah, so far, I mean, it's new in the market, of course, and we don't have much data for the moment, but all of the cases that have so far entered the system, or shall I say 80% of them, are cross-border cases, either of EU nationals, mostly EU nationals, coming into Greece and having a problem with a Greek trader, or going to other places. I mean, we had some also cases handling outside the Europe, United States, Israel, China. So, wow. The direct negotiation offers another good way of resolving disputes. Why? Because in most cases, when traders are registered, I mean, because in most cases, it's so difficult to find a way to talk to the trader. I don't know what's happening in other places, but I know the European experience is so easy to buy, but then when you have a problem, it's so difficult, you know, they vanish, or you can end up in a chat, you know, asking something and they repeat the same question, the same answer. So it's pretty frustrating for the consumer to be able to have a redress whenever he needs that for something that he bought. And also one thing also we try to combat with this system is that we need a fast redress, because the European legislation provides for a 90 days redress, which if you get an extensions and if you go to the process whereby the consumer, the trader needs to agree on the ADR center, which will handle the case, it sums up to 180 days. So nobody can wait 180 days to resolve a consumer dispute. I mean, it's just an issue of 100 or 200 or a smartphone broken. Yeah. So we try to squeeze this dispute resolution time to a few days, which I think is very good, not only for the consumers, but also for the traders.
Because I mean, it's classic high volume, low value disputes, isn't it? Of which there are a great deal. And it seems to me that what your process does also, particularly and uniquely because of the online aspect, is it bypasses, if not resolves, the issue of jurisdiction. Because one of the issues of resolving disputes cross-border is whose legal system. And effectively, you're saying the online platform is not so much the legal system, it's the normative system. So online platforms become the normative framework in which people operate. So it's procedural rather than legal. Is that right? Am I understanding?
Yes, very well said. This is exactly what we do. And this is something that we also emphasize to traders and to consumers, that this is the easiest way you can resolve a dispute. Yeah. And after that, you need this reality testing. If you don't find a solution here, I don't know what else you should try. I mean, how you'll be able to find a solution. And in most cases, this is well accepted. And this is very important. And that's why we also try to keep all the template and the layout and all the flow very easy for someone to use. We could do it as complicated as we can. I mean, sure. It's easy to make things complicated, but we wanted to do something which is universal that anybody can use it. And the third version that is going to come up perhaps in a year from now, because we're working on that, we'll also have some more features which are great. I don't know whether you have time to say a few words about that.
Of course.
So we will integrate in the app a trader's evaluation system, like a rating, which will not be made by the consumer, because we don't want it to be biased by those handling the administration panel, mediators and administrators. And it will focus on a few things like how the trader responds if he participated in the process, because it's a voluntary process, and how cooperative was in during resolving the dispute, whether the dispute was resolved or not. We don't care about the result, and some other features. So there's going to be a rating, how many disputes he has resolved. So there's be a rating system which might be an incentive for the traders to participate. The second addition we're going to make is related to a decision assisting tool, which is will help the consumers decide which ADR entity is more suitable for their case on basis of several criteria. Like, for example, if they speak French, might be a French ADR entity, or if they are in Greece, a Greek ADR entity, and so on, the distance and some other features or expertise in the field that they want. And the third one is also a decision assisting tool. It will get all the data from the system and will provide to some potential probable outcomes to the consumer in three different categories. What would be the outcome if he files the case directly for negotiation? What would be if he files directly to an ADR body? And what would be the case if he files first for negotiation, and if not resolved, then to an ADR body? Mm-hmm. So, but of course, this needs a quite a big amount of data. But these are three additions which are intended to become to be in the future in the year.
Wonderful. Now, I want to move on to a couple of the other things I know you're involved in, but I have one practical question which others may ask, which is the funding of this. Do traders and consumers pay a fee up front? Is there a fee for being a registered trader? How does it work?
There is the first of all, according to the Greek legislation, when we have a complaint coming from an EU consumer against a Greek trader, there is no fee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the consumer. But in all other combinations, there is a fee for the consumer. Also, traders traders who will be registered in the platform, they're going to pay a fee for using the platform and managing all their cases with their consumers. And actually, we have the pricing policy on the ADR for all website. We decided, for reasons of promotion, to leave it free for all traders until the end of 2022. And then there is a very affordable, I must say, fee, depending on the volume of the cases that each is
three
trading.
Three steps.
Yes,
I think,
three, four. Yeah, yeah, okay, steps, exactly. Yeah. And so it's all on our website.
Yeah,
yeah. No, that, and then there are more additional packages. This has to do with negotiation. So the traders will pay a very affordable fee for using the platform for having their negotiations. If they use the services of a mediator, there will be some additional packages some extra fees for the mediation. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's come up in the last couple of conversations I've had with all three, Leah and Ethan and Colin, is the issue of accessibility. And mm-hmm. it seems to me, I think, that because you're entirely a mobile phone-based application, it is much more likely to be accessible than something that's dependent upon accessing a computer, having fast Wi-Fi. Was that part of your thinking?
Absolutely, it was. And speaking of accessibility, there was the European Commission instructed us to, when we do something like that, to take into account also vulnerable consumers. Mm-hmm. And to our view, vulnerable consumers are all these people, not only with physical impairments like blind people, but also people who cannot have a computer, who cannot go to an office of an ADR entity and file a complaint. But all those people, because we notice, Ian, that even refugees that are coming to Greece, they might not have their barefoot, they don't have even a second shirt, but they do have a smartphone.
Yeah,
and that also gave us the idea. It would be good to discuss that, or perhaps in another podcast. That gave us the idea of doing an ODR for refugees app, which is not completed in its entirety, but 70% is completed. We're going to launch it perhaps next year. So the idea is for everybody, everybody is going to have a cell phone. Now, speaking of access, of course, we acknowledge the fact that there are some people who cannot use, my father cannot use a smartphone, okay? Is he excluded from that? He's excluded from ADR for all, but he's not excluded to file a complaint coming to the office because we provide that service too.
Yeah.
But, we need to see ahead, and the future ahead is that everything is going to be done through our smartphones.
So you should say that you may remember, is it 4 or 5 years ago, there was an international press photograph of the year. It was a silhouette. It was blue and very dark silhouettes of a group of, I think, Somali refugees who had just landed, boat people had just landed on shore, and all of them were holding up their phones. They were looking for a signal, and because you can get a cheap burner phone, because it tragically is the lifeline. So yes, in the absence of anything else, we will have smartphones, but and it's going to be a consistent thread of our concern, isn't it, through ODR, that we maximize the level of accessibility. And my guess is that what you're doing is by putting things on a smartphone platform is just that, you make it more accessible. On that, and the refugee one, see how our timing goes. We may come back to that, but because that one is really interesting, and it's a conversation I want to have with you, and I hope Frank Fowley and others later, because we've got, is it something like 14 million people, 14 million refugees at the moment who don't have access to resources. But for the moment, one other aspect of your ADR for all, what you're referring to as an ecosystem, which is the environmental impact, the environmental, almost the credentials. Can you say a bit about that?
So we're very sensitive about that, and one of the end, it's also written in our website, is that we need a system that burdens the environment as less as possible. So not unnecessary traveling, we don't need use of paper, and whatever resources we can save for us is a matter of principle. And one of the idea behind that, and behind audio generally, is the is the idea that we do everything digitally. And actually, that's why, and very well, we also signed the pledge for a greener environment and how mediation can help on that. So using our ecosystem, you don't need to have everything. You don't need to travel. You don't need to use paper. You don't need to send something. We keep it green. Just use your app and you can store everything. The discussions, you can export them and you can store them in your iPhone. Same goes with the trader. We don't, deforestation, for example, is very much related to the use of paper. And it's our small contribution to that. I mean, we cannot save the environment by ourselves, but in our view, it's if everybody does that, I think it will be a huge movement for the protection of the environment. Yeah. For us, we're very sensitive on that, and we advocate for that. That's why we put it on our website, because it's access to justice for consumers is one target, but equally important is the protection of the environment.
Oh, if we could call for a round of applause for that, because it's because they go together so closely. And we make a follow up on your brief reference to the Green Pledge for mediators, and there's also a Green Pledge for arbitrators. Lucy Greenwood in the UK has done a wonderful work in promoting green arbitration, because arbitration, possibly more than litigation, has been hugely consuming of resources, travel, flying, paper, etc. So it's, as you say, every little step we can take towards improving access and improving a sustainable access. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who listen to this will be very supportive. On that we do have a little time. We're going to need to wind up in a few minutes, but I really do want to hear a bit more about your ODR for Refugees project. Did you do a presentation on this for the 2017 ODR Forum in Paris?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
And this is something, I'm amazed by your good memory, Ian.
I took good notes all through that forum. It struck me as just being a whole new field to go into. So please tell us more.
This is a project that we... In Greece, I'm sure you know that we have a very big problem with refugees. More than a million refugees have come to Greece, and we faced enormous problems, not only with the tragic stories of these people, but also the way that many Greeks thought that these people intercepted their everyday life, and there were some problems with the refugees in the camps, problems between the refugees. Because they were coming from different countries and different religions, and family problems also, interaction with the Greek communities. So we thought of creating an app again for resolving. We noticed also, because we invited some of them to participate in mediation context to bring us their own culture of how they mediate cases, because they have several different ways of mediating cases. It's part of their culture. And we decided to develop an app, also using our own resources. That's why, it's moving so slowly. Actually, we did a very simple flow, very simple workflow, asking the mediator in like speaking with each other, in very common language, everyday language, hi, welcome, and we know how difficult it is for you, let us help you, what's your name, who you have problem with, and we were using all channels of communication like Facebook, WhatsApp, Viber, and so on, asking what the problem would be, and then discuss, also we will add this chat that we now have, and we will discuss the problem with him and the other party, whatever the other party be, like someone from the community or someone from the refugee camp or someone from the administration, mm-hmm. or whoever, a fellow national of this refugee whom he has problem with. And hopefully this will be, we will use also the services of many mediators. So this will be developed in several countries as a pilot scheme at the beginning, using Spain, Italy, Turkey, perhaps in other places who have displaced people. And it's a big project, a very big project. It's not only materializing the app, but it's also providing the service, because in most of the cases, in most of these cases, we will provide mediation service and not negotiation. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we will also thinking of training some nationals that speak Arabic and all these languages of the displaced people. Yes. And hopefully try to, you know, we'll try to provide a relief for these people. And because in my view, the number of displaced people will increase enormously. And these are the predictions also of of the United Nations. So we need to do something, because we want these people to feel comfortable, whatever they look at the problem with the Ukrainian people. Almost 5 million people have gone to Europe. You know, they don't know how the system works and they might have problems. You need to give them a way of resolving disputes. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole project is going very slowly because of lack of resources. Now, actually, there are a couple of funding programs that we will examine to see if they're willing to participate on that. And we will also talk to the High Commissioner for Refugees in the United Nations to see if they are willing to, you know, to fund this program.
Wow. Yeah. My recollection, too, if I'm right, is that part of your presentation in 2017 was looking at ways of providing stable identity for refugees through blockchain. Is that part of your plan?
Well, it was at the beginning. We need to re-examine. We cannot, to be honest with you, this is not something that we can do without the help of...
That's very high tech.
High tech, and we need amazing resources, and we need to place that under funding of someone. We cannot do it with our own resources.
What's appealing about each of the things you shared with us today, Petros, is not only the compassionate commitment to helping people at the front line in some very, very basic, straightforward transactions, things that go wrong in people's lives, through to the much more dramatic level of things that go wrong when people are forced out of their own countries. But you have a strong commitment to resolving that and doing it in ways which are as accessible as possible. And this to me speaks volumes about the potential of what the field that you and I are involved in using digital technology, which often people are terribly scared about, because it seems, you know, what's going on behind our screen seems impossible for us to understand. But if someone like you and your colleagues can make that technology accessible, affordable, and user-friendly, then you're doing the job, aren't you? We're doing our job. And
first thing, Ian, is that we do keep for the moment the personal element, the personal involvement. So people, consumers, when they file a case for negotiation or for mediation, they will have some kind of connection with the administrator, because they get messages from him, not from a machine, but from a person. Yeah. And also they will be able to talk to a mediator, which is a real person. And also if the refugees, someone is greeting them, and there will be a real mediator. So yes, there is the technology, but there's always someone behind the technology, not just technology. Okay.
Yeah.
And they need that in this transition, I think, in order to succeed to this transition. When they get used to the system, then we might use it fully automated, with artificial intelligence and other tools. But for the moment, we need the personal element. We need to make them trust the system.
Yeah. I mean, there's a film this reminds me of. I don't know whether it made it to Greece. It's basically from Northern England, a film called I, Daniel Blake. And it's a very powerful film about a man who is homeless, and struggles with the system, homeless not necessarily through any fault of his own, but everything that he needs by way of access to help from the system, from the state, he has to access through computers. And of course he has no way of doing that. He doesn't own one, he has no way. And there's one very poignant scene where he's in the local town library, because that's where there are freely accessible computers. But of course, he's confronted with a screen, which is completely meaningless to him. But what they have there is the librarian who helps him. And she talks them through that. So, but your point is for all the technology is wonderful and gives us rapid access. It allows us to have this conversation, for example. But for most, there needs to be that help there that says, excuse me, but I have no idea what's going on behind the screen. So it seems to me that what you're doing is an extraordinary combination of the humane and the digital. Not that they're necessarily contradictory, but I'm delighted to have heard that. We are going to need to wrap up, and it seems to me that your closing comments are a great note on which to conclude. So, Petros, thank you hugely for your time. For me, this has been informative. Love to catch up with you again. And thank you for your time. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And really, all the best for the big project too, the ODR for refugees. Thank you.
Pleasure was all mine, and thank you very much for having me, and I hope to see you soon somewhere in one of these ODR forums.
This podcast has been brought to you by ICODER, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about ICODER or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.